Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 108 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my Lego buddy, Ben Bumhoffer.
That's a good intro. I like that. You know what? First and foremost, I just want to say it's spring, so we might cough or sneeze, and I'll do my best to just kind of take that out.
Allergies!
Yeah, my nose has been bugging me for like the past week. I'm like, what is going on? Oh, stuff's blooming, and I've stepped outside.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, but you are correct. I am your Lego buddy, so much so that sometimes I just completely fall to pieces.
So, Ben, before we jump into things, why don't you tell everyone why this intro, other than the fact that I'm looking at your camera right now and the Star Wars Legos abound, something actually pretty dang cool, if not slightly bank breaking, did come out recently.
Oh, yeah, it is definitely bank breaking. But the Lego Insiders Dungeons and Dragons set has released for Lego Insiders members, which it's totally free to sign up. And all you do is just basically say, hey, this is my name. And then you're a Lego Insider. So you can order it right now. Otherwise, it releases on the 4th. But if you were lucky enough to order it like I did at 9:01 p.m. Pacific time on March 31st, which would be right after midnight on, you know, the Eastern Seaboard, I also got a free gift of a small dice holder, which is a mimic, and something else too that was like Easter themed or something, or flower themed or spring themed or something, whatever. I don't care about that. But this new Lego set is absolutely amazing and fantastic. It's a modular set that has a couple different like kind of locations that are all like linked together, but you can take them apart. And the coolest thing about it is that there's actually an adventure that goes along with the set. So you can kind of play it with the Lego characters and everything.
And you use the set to run it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's got a broken down wizard tower, an inn. There's a dragon involved, as well as some classic D&D monsters.
A little Lego beholder.
I know, it's so cool. And then don't forget the little Lego owlbear too. That's just awesome.
My gosh.
But yeah, it comes with a few different minifigs that you play as, that actually you can swap between male and female on them. So, you know, let's say you want to play a female wizard. You don't have to wear the white beard, and there's a different head for you and stuff, so that you can, you know, look a different part and everything.
Super cool.
Plus, I've seen a little bit of the behind the scenes on this from some people who got it early and kind of did a review and stuff. And the really awesome thing is like, there's like actually traps involved. There's treasure that you can find, like hidden keys and stuff. Like it's pretty cool. But the even better part is that, even if you don't buy the Lego set, if you're a Lego Insider, you can, for like 0 points, no money, nothing, can go onto the Lego website and actually get the adventure in digital form. So I recommend that, just because, you know, having more adventure stuff that you can just pull from is always a good thing. But the fact that it is tied to the set is just something that I think is really cool. So I'm super excited for it. I checked my order and the shipment is broken into two shipments. So I don't know if like the big set's coming and then the dice boxes or whatever, but something's coming tomorrow and something's showing up on Thursday. So either way, it's going to be two good days of Lego happiness.
That's exciting. And not only that, I believe Lego brought in several big people in the D&D space to play the adventure that they're going to be releasing a VOD of on Friday, I think, on the 6th?
Saturday on the 6th, yes.
Or Saturday on the 6th, yes.
Yes, it's actually going to be played at noon Eastern time. I think on the Lego website. But yeah, it's pretty sweet. I'm excited. But the in-game characters they have is a dwarf cleric, a gnome fighter, an orc rogue, and then an elf wizard. So you have, you know, a couple different options to kind of play in there and everything. Like I said, you got the different environments, a bunch of different fights and stuff. Oh, and there's also a buildable gelatinous cube, which I think is pretty fantastic. But yeah, overall, it's pretty awesome. If you haven't ordered it yet, currently it is on back order, which is going to be shipping April 18th. That's currently. But it is a pretty popular set, and I mean, it's going to stick around for quite a while. But let's see, 3,745 pieces. So
it's a pretty big one.
Yeah, it's big. Dimension wise, 19 inches tall, 15 inches wide, 12 inches deep. So it is a good play space.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Very cool. Very cool. So that consider that our advertisement for Legos, apparently.
Hey, but if they want to start advertising and send us stuff to review, I'll throw that in every episode.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's D&D or not, whatever. It's cool.
we both love Legos. They're super cool, and it honestly is a really cool set. So if that is, especially Lego collecting is up your alley, this is a very cool set.
Definitely. And we'll have a link to the set in the store and everything in our show notes, so check it out. And you can see what an animated Lego beholder looks like.
All right. So continuing on, there's a bunch of news to cover today.
Oh my gosh, is there so much news. So
yeah,
I went out of town over the week, not Easter weekend, but the weekend before, and all this news decided to drop to the point where I went, I was completely out of cell range. When I got back into it, I had about maybe 10 different messages from Ryan just saying, oh, hey, here's this and this and this. And yeah,
it's a link.
Tons of stuff.
Yeah. No. So the big reason for it is GaryCon happened,
mm-hmm.
which is a kind of, you know, D&D convention kind of celebrating Gary Gygax, one of the creators of Dungeons and Dragons. They have a lot of different panels. They play lots of games there. It's not like a massive convention, but there's a lot of like big D&D people who go down there. There were several people from Wizards who worked on the D&D team that went down there. So Christian Hoffer, who works for comicbook.com, was able to be there as well and got a lot of interviews, got a lot of stuff from the panel they did on the 50th anniversary stuff for D&D. So we wanted to kind of go through some of that stuff real fast just to make you aware of it. There's some really interesting things. First off being they talked a little bit about the new 2024 books.
Mm-hmm.
They confirmed that there's 48 subclasses, which is a few more than was in the original Player's Handbook, but they're now actually more evenly balanced. So each class is getting four, which is cool, because there were some classes that only got like two originally. And not only that, every single class, subclass, is going to get a big key art page.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a big like art piece for each class and then the subclasses too, to kind of give you like a starter fantasy of them.
Yeah, like a little sneak peek of the idea behind it and stuff. And from what we kind of got as just a small little preview, the art so far is just absolutely gorgeous. The preview they showed is, what was it, a wizard or a sorcerer? But it was
a wizard.
Yeah, a wizard.
Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful piece.
Done by Billy Christian, and it is so gorgeous. We're gonna make sure that we have a link to that definitely in the show notes. But check it out. I mean, it is absolutely amazing, and I love the fact that they're highlighting each of the classes and subclasses to really kind of give you a feel, because sometimes, you know, you might look at something's like, oh, I don't know really which one to play or something, but then you see the picture and then you just get kind of the vibe directly from that. And you know, oh, I want to play the Eldritch Knight, or I want to play that elemental monk, or, you know, whatever you're going to be doing, just because the picture just kind of throws that imagination at you, and then you can build on it and grow it, and then, you know, really kind of have a set goal on what you want to do when you're creating your character.
Yeah, agreed. It's a really cool thing. And it just makes the book that much more higher quality. I love looking through like gorgeous art in books, especially when I get like the hard copies of them. So I'm very excited to see that. They also talked a little bit about the upcoming Vecna Eve of Ruin adventure that is kind of going to be like a plane hopping thing as you look for this rod of seven parts, a powerful D&D artifact that can potentially stop Vecna from remaking the multiverse in his image. Sounds like something you should probably find.
It seems throughout important. That,
it seems important. They announced that the beastery for Vecna will include 30 pages of new monsters, including a spider dragon, a dreadwolf, and a heartworm. So again, we'll have links to all these things on dndiscussions.com if you want to check out any of these articles or look at the pictures that we're talking about. But very, very cool stuff. This and then for those that don't recall, this book is coming out May 21st. And I believe is already up for pre-order.
Yep.
And I feel like this will be really kind of our first taste of what like the 2024 revision stuff is going to look like, especially in terms of design and like monsters, stat blocks and stuff. Because I assume these pretty much anything that comes out this year will likely be using whatever new models or methods they are using for their monster revamp stuff.
Exactly. And if for some reason you really need some sort of headcanon on why some classes are being revised or magic rules are changing or something going forward, look, if Vecna's reshaping the multiverse, he could be partially successful. And that's why there's a new player handbook coming out. That's why certain things are changing. If you need to have a headcanon for it or to explain why certain rules are different at your table or something story-wise, like if you really don't want to break that character, this is the way to do it. It's just right there.
Yeah, exactly. And they also talked a little bit about the other book that's coming out, Quests from the Infinite Staircase, which is remaking like six classic D&D adventures, from most of which are from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Expedition to the Barrier Peaks, Beyond the Crystal Cave, Lost City. There's six of them, all from the 80s, that are getting kind of remade and put into this anthology type book. And then it is coming out on July 16th.
Yeah.
So not too much longer after Vecna. They also got to talk a little bit about some of the new books that are coming. They've been working on them for, you know, over 2 years. Lots of Unearthed Arcana play testing. They want these to be kind of the best, at least Chris Perkins has said, the best books that they've ever done, which just from the sound of things, one of the things they mentioned in one of the articles was these are going to be the most budgeted D&D books. So these books have the biggest budget. They have the biggest staff that D&D has ever had working on them. So it's going to be a pretty big deal.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that they've been putting so much out in Unearthed Arcana and really trying to get as much playtest information as possible is really kind of going along a theme that they're working for, was, you know, again, making the best that they could, but also getting a lot of player input and player support into it. And it's something that I really appreciate because, you know, it just gives that much more of like kind of a personal touch to, you know, any sort of information that they're releasing. But even more so, you know, the fact that, well, one, we all totally and completely shot down the druid, you know, and I'm so glad that we did that because it was in a really bad place. And on top of that, too, being able to, you know, talk about like the inspiration and crit rules and stuff like that, and have our you know, opinions heard and everything there. It really has been like a great experience to be part of the playtesting and, you know, going through the Unearthed Arcana. And that's something that I'm really happy that we've been able to, you know, cover on the show.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm really glad they did a lot of that, and I hope they continue to refine a lot of that, especially the ones that were still a little on the lower end of the feedback. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a good process. And then he talked about too. So this is with a talk with Chris Perkins and Justice Armin, who we actually had on the show a long time ago. God, because we've been doing the show for a while. Before he worked for Wizards, mm-hmm. he was there because he's a senior game designer now at Wizards, and I believe he's leading Quest in the Infinite Staircase as well, which is awesome. And they were both saying that neither of them thought that other RPGs were a detriment to D&D, and in fact noted that other games presented more opportunities for play and different kinds of storytelling. And then Chris said that Wizards wanted to support the tabletop RPG industry, and then pointed to the recent additions of third-party content to D&D Beyond as an example of that, which I think is a big step. It really is.
Yes.
That is the kind of visibility and support that third-party creators have been honestly needing for a really long time. And obviously we don't know the terms or anything of these, but it's a super cool thing for those of us that use that platform, because that platform has been extremely helpful in helping run games, and having just beyond official content on it is incredibly nice as well, and gives you another way to support your favorite third-party creators, as well as gives them a lot more visibility to this giant platform that has been built up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the fact that, I mean, the partnering with that stuff, and then it's being added to D&D Beyond, meaning, you know, you don't have to actually, you know, buy the supplement and enter all the information in yourself is fantastic. The fact that, you know, I think that we're getting the maps already in there too from those books. I'm not 100% sure on that.
Yeah, most
I believe so.
Is also, yeah, dropping into their maps tool.
Yeah, in fact, I'm going to look right now just to make sure that I'm not making stuff up, because, yeah. But, I mean, all the different stuff that they've been adding has just been an amazing, wonderful, great thing. Yeah, Humblewood campaign setting maps right there. Tadori campaign setting right there. So yeah, everything's in there in the maps and stuff for that stuff. So, geez, there's so much in. I haven't looked at the map section in a long time. They have a lot of the books and adventures.
They're adding. They're like back adding some every
month. Yeah.
Now, that's great if you own those types of things and are starting to use that as your like virtual tabletop space. Mm-hmm. Especially if you're running through modules, having those maps in there is super nice for sure.
Yeah. We are actually going to be switching to using, the D&D Beyond virtual tabletop in my next session. I'm actually really looking forward to, using it and seeing how it works out.
Yeah, that's great. I'm looking forward to hearing how that works for your group. They also talked a little bit about actual plays, you know, the rise of actual plays and the performances and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about how D&D historian and writer Mike Witwer mentioned that actual plays cracked the code for making D&D accessible that generations of game designers and game publishers had failed to do for decades. And then he asked Chris, you know, if the revised core rulebooks were written with actual play in mind. And Chris said that the advice in the rulebooks were presented with a focus on how the game is really played, including online play and actual play, which I think is really, really key in a lot of ways, because both of those are very big forms of how D&D is played now, not just in person. So I think that I really hope that the focus around all this stuff around the player's handbook, around the DM's guide, especially because Wizards has even admitted many times that the Dungeon Master's Guide was probably one of the weakest they put out, mainly because of time crunch and lack of resources at the time. But they have a perfect opportunity to correct those mistakes, to really streamline it, to add a lot of stuff that is more interesting or more used or more needed, and to take that 10 years of feedback and really put it in. And to that standpoint, they also dropped that they had some bigger names help out with the upcoming update to the Dungeon Master's Guide. Chris confirmed both Matt Mercer and Deborah Ann Wall actually consulted on the upcoming Dungeon Master's Guide, specifically providing feedback to make sure that the tools offered in the book were useful to Dungeon Masters running the new version of the game. He didn't elaborate on the full scope of the consultants brought in. Apparently that list is going to be revealed later this summer. He also mentioned that another consultant who ran games for kids was brought on specifically to provide tips on how to run games for kids. So this is the kind of stuff I want to see. This is the kind of thing that I think the new Dungeon Master's Guide needs. So I was very happy to hear that they're really focusing on lots of different viewpoints, lots of different angles for like teaching and running the game.
Yeah. And I mean, having their perspectives in there is probably one of the best assets that any sort of, you know, DMing book can have. Going through and, you know, watching actual plays is kind of how I learned to DM for the most part. You know, I mean, also, you know, listening to players' responses to, you know, like rulings, kind of figuring out like tone and pacing and things like that. You know, it was those actual plays that really kind of helped let me get that foot in the door. The DM's guide, like the original one for 5.0 or, you know, fifth edition, is, I mean, it is what it is. We've talked about it before. It's, you know, definitely lacking, but the fact that they have the input from some of the best DMs that we've seen out there is just really exciting. And I mean, you can't have two more different DMs than Deborah Ann Wall and Matt Mercer. And they're both amazing at what they do, but they run their games entirely differently. And they're both like such pros at it too, just through storytelling, how they handle their players, how they, you know, work with just, you know, homebrew rules and stuff that they have. So the fact that they both run actual plays, that they both run home games, that they've had all this experience built into, you know, built into this book is super exciting, along with all the other consults that they're going to have. You know, I'm probably most excited about this compared to the new Monster Manual and the new Player's Handbook, just because of the potential that it already has from all the information that we've gotten about it.
Yeah, I agree. And even at the end of the article, they mention Wizards has promised that the new DMG in particular will be receiving an upgrade when the, you know, with the release of the core revised rule books, featuring more relevant tools for Dungeon Masters and how to run both adventures and campaigns with examples of both included in the new book.
Yeah.
So that's really cool.
Yeah. And if you don't really know, there's a huge difference between running an adventure and running a campaign. You know, there's a lot more that goes into one versus the other, but both of them have a lot of similar rules, but different at the same time. It's just one of those fun things. So having that distinction in there, I think is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I agree. And then there was a really good article that we'll also link from GamesRadar that interviewed Chris Perkins as well. And it just kind of talks through how their decision to not make a new edition of the game was mainly because people couldn't get enough of this one.
Yes.
Which is honestly not surprising. Between this edition basically being around in a newer form and in the catalyst era of actual plays, Critical Role, Dimension 20, of the pandemic happening and so much stuff going online, and then this edition getting a robust online tool set, along with its very adaptable and flexible nature, it's not super surprising that this is something they want to continue, mm-hmm. and they just want to tinker with and just kind of refine after 10 years of feedback and such, versus just throw it all out and start over again, which they probably will eventually. Right.
Yeah.
But they're talking about this being around. And the biggest thing is one of the things he talked about in this article was that when an edition was reaching end of life, he said they saw the downward trend of sales, engagement and stuff such, and they haven't seen that yet with fifth edition. They have continued growth with this edition of the game, and so they're taking that as fans telling them that we love fifth edition, and so their job is how can we make it better.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, yeah, it's a really good, he kind of breaks down, you know, how the playtesting in the Unearthed Arcana, the different classes. And it's funny because they asked him about the classes, and he thinks that there's too many core classes,
yeah.
which I thought was funny. He said, speaking frankly, this is my personal opinion, 12 classes is actually a lot. If I were redesigning, if I could go back to 2012, I'd probably put a strong case forward that we could actually do with less classes in the core game. Mm-hmm. And then make the subclasses the Wild West and the like, differentiate them more. And obviously it's kind of interesting to think about, right? Because the system as it is now, you obviously don't want fewer classes, because the way things are built right now, we've seen a bunch of fully built full-on classes from great third parties that fill a niche that does not exist,
mm-hmm.
for the current class,
yeah.
that are very unique and have their own stuff. But I totally could see a version of this where you have those four or five like core classes, but then subclasses are way more than they are now. Like, you couldn't do that, I don't think, with subclasses in their current form, because I don't think subclasses in the current form have enough flexibility and get enough stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I could totally see a world where if the subclasses were double or triple what they are now, then you could basically have four or five or six of those base classes and then kind of design anything into them.
Exactly. And one of the big examples that he has, and it's really more of a, you know, speaking to someone who's just getting into D&D, like the difference between a wizard and a sorcerer. And even when we started my campaign, you know, kind of creating characters and going over it, actually, anytime I create a character with someone, you know, giving them the difference between a wizard and a sorcerer is kind of like, okay, now which one's which? Okay, well, this one's the book smarts. This one has the innate talent. Then, well, what's a warlock? Oh, no, we don't play those. They're horrible. So, oh, okay. So, you know, we just stick to the two major classes of casting. But, you know, I can see them being combined and having the subclass go off of, you know, something entirely different, which would be, you know, like a wizardly path, or, you know, going from there to like more of a necromancer path or something like that, you know, instead of bringing like a necromancer class into it, you know, and then just focusing on those types of spells or something. You know, if I remember correctly, because, you know, I'm going through that wonderful book that we were sent, like the barbarian was kind of more of a subclass of a fighter at the beginning, if I remember.
Which you could totally see.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. You know, I'm a fighter. I attack with stuff and everything. Oh, but I'm a rage filled one. I'm a barbarian. Oh, I'm going to run up and start attacking things and stuff.
And you could easily have some base magic class that mm-hmm. could then divulge into warlocks or wizards or sorcerers.
Exactly.
Et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you can kind of combine, you know, the big classes that we have now. And because, I mean, some of them are just kind of flavor of the same thing if you really get down to bare bones in it. But I kind of like the idea of, you know, subclasses really being the way to go to really differentiate, to really split out, to have just a ton of, you know, different options to really get in there and play with. And on top of that, whenever that does happen, as long as we get art for every single one of those, I'm definitely going to be backing that idea.
Yeah, I love art. I love good art. He also talked a little bit about rules changes. And they talked, you know, about Baldur's Gate 3. We've talked about this some at length, how Baldur's Gate 3 has inspired many, or the tweaks they made to make it more, you know, game friendly for a computer game or a console game versus a tabletop game. And Chris talked a little bit about that there weren't necessarily any rules changes that stem from that, but he said one of the delightful features of D&D that I don't think gets enough press is that it is eminently flexible, and we don't expect people to play it the same way. That means we can jump from Baldur's Gate 3 to a tabletop game to some other expression of D&D, and very few people blink an eye. We just provide tools and inspiration. Exactly. And I think that is very true. I have not been at a D&D table that has played exactly the same yet.
Same here.
Almost every DM has their own little things, their own tweaks, their own way they play things, their own way they interpret things. And I mean, I do.
I'm saying
for 100%. I totally do. I know you do as well. And so I think that just kind of ties into what he's talking about, how there's no one right way to play D&D. The rules are a guide. But the system, especially fifth edition, is flexible enough to give you that room to tweak things without the entire, you know, house of cards falling down.
Exactly. There is no 100% rules as written game out there. Anyone who says that they are, they're still interpreting the rules in their own way. You know, everybody does that. You know, I'll read a spell description. You'll read a spell description. 98% of the time we might come to the same conclusion on how it works, but you know, there's that 2% there where I go one way, you go the other way, but we make each of those ways work for what we're doing at our table. And that's one of the best advantages and best things about D&D and other, you know, TTRPGs is having that control of saying, oh, well, that rule's stupid, or that wording's weird. We're going to do it like this instead. And you know what? If it doesn't work, we just change it in the future. It's just one of those things. It's like a living document almost, you know, from game to game to game. It, just like everybody has their own house rules for Monopoly. Same exact thing for D&D. You know, everybody has their own homebrew rules of some sort.
Yeah, that is 100% true. What I actually learned what the real rules for Monopoly was, where I was flabbergasted, because that is not the way we played in my household growing up. So it's totally a thing.
Free parking doesn't actually get you all the money you stack in the middle of the game, because that doesn't ever happen.
Yeah. Yeah. But it totally did in my game.
Me too. Because they picked it up from somewhere else. That's someone else did somewhere else, you know?
Yeah. And kind of just bouncing off of that, I wanted to use that as a springboard for our second topic tonight, which is narrative adventures in D&D. So this kind of came from a really well done Polygon article by Charlie Hall, and we'll have that linked in the show notes as well, called Worlds Beyond Numbers, Teaching Me Things That No D&D Book Can, a masterclass in running a narrative adventure. And so what Worlds Beyond Number is basically a homegrown podcast that is going right now, that is run by Brennan Lee Mulligan. And the players are Lou and Abria and Eric Ishii. And they are going through an incredibly, from what I remember reading, because I haven't had much time to listen to it yet, just because time.
Yeah.
But it is on my list because everyone I've talked to who has listened to it has said it's just absolutely incredible. And like very well produced, and an amazing story. But they started basically at level zero. And Brennan's goal, last I heard, was to take the entire campaign through level 20, and it could take years potentially to do this. Mm-hmm. And they're leveling very slowly, and it's apparently a very combat light campaign, at least so far. And so a lot of people, there's a huge like discussion that I saw like erupting on Twitter, and probably partially some of what this article came from. They have a Patreon for this, and they have fireside chats they release to talk about different aspects of the game or the episodes or whatever. And a lot of stuff came up of, this is a really narrative D&D campaign. Why are you using D&D for mm-hmm. it? It's kind of an interesting story. And so Brennan had a little quote from that conversation that I wanted to read a little bit of and discuss, because I thought it was really interesting. So Dungeon Master Brennan Lee Mulligan recently dealt with part of the larger tabletop RPG discourse head on. D&D is no more combat oriented than some other system, he argues, and the murder hobos of the world that are convinced otherwise simply aren't playing the same way that he and his team are used to. Mm-hmm. Calling D&D a combat-oriented game would sort of be like looking at a stove and being like, this has nothing to do with food. You can't eat metal. Clearly, this contraption is for moving gas around and having a clock on it. If it was about food, there would be some food here. What you should get is a machine that is either made of food or has food in it. I'm going to bring the food. The food is my favorite part. People say that because D&D has so many combat mechanics, you are destined to tell combat stories. I fundamentally disagree. Combat is the part I'm the least interested in simulating through improvisational storytelling. So I need a game to do that for me. While I take care of emotions, relationships, and character progression, because that shit is intuitive and I understand it well. I don't intuitively understand how an arrow moves through a fictional airspace. And I really wanted to discuss this a little bit because I love this quote so much. Mm-hmm. Because, and remember, this is all based on styles. Obviously, Brennan and Lou and Erica and Abria are professional performers.
Yes.
They're professional improvers. This is not advice that is going to necessarily fit for everyone. There likely is a system that will fit better for your specific group, especially if you are not heavy on the improv side of things. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, I completely agree with this statement because the current campaign I'm running is a lot more RP story, political thriller focused oriented. There's combat, but that's not going to be necessarily like the main driver of this campaign. And we've already had, even in just the seven sessions I played, some of the strongest like character moments and RP moments of any campaign I've ever run, period. And this is in D&D. And I completely agree with this because I don't want to have to, I like that the system is fairly loose around the role play type mechanics because I want those to just happen organically.
Yes.
I don't want there to be a lot of rules around my narrative or a lot of rules around my RP. What I do want there to be rules around is my combat, because that for me, at least, would be the hardest type of stuff to do on the fly. And that's also potentially the hardest for players to have to figure out on the fly. But when I have a whole set of stuff that says, this is combat, these are the spells, these are the moves, these are how things interact if you're using a board, etc., that part is taken care of. So when we slip into that, all the rules, all the mechanics are there and we can go with it. But then when the story hits, we can just go with the flow. We can improvise, we can role play, and we don't have to worry about the mechanics for it because they're very loose and you just kind of do the abstract of what fits with skill checks or whatever, if you need them.
Exactly. And I really think that that's one of the reasons why fifth edition has become one of the strongest versions of D&D. I mean, granted, there are people out there who are still going to be all about 3.5. There's like two people who are all about 4, you know, whatever. But the fact that fifth edition has, you know, a lot of loosely based, you know, kind of skills that you can use here and there, you know, there's rules behind them and stuff, but you have your main stats, you've got that stuff. You know, every sort of living thing kind of has its own stats. We're good with that. That's good. Fine. We're happy. Having everything being, you know, a lot more character driven through interactions and talking and everything like that, and giving us the chance to really get in there and RP, but have that backing of loose rules, like you're saying, really helps out the entire situation. You know, if I have a party who we're playing, like say Beyond or, you know, Wild Beyond the Witchlight, how that entire adventure setup so that you do not ever have to do combat. You know, it only proves that D&D is not a combat mechanic or a combat only kind of game. You know, there's plenty of times and sessions where we go, you know, RP wise and it's crazy, whether it's, you know, just a shopping trip to the market versus, you know, discussing things with the king or plotting an adventure or plotting a plan to do something like that. Or, you know, just all these different interactions, because Dungeons and Dragons is as rich as the world you create for it. And yeah, you could just have a group of murder hobos going around and attacking everything. But if that's not the game that you're striving for, fifth edition and D&D in general is great to have, because you have that as a backup for when you need it, if it ever comes into play. But everything else is there to just, you know, play with it, have fun with it, just see where it takes you. You don't have to constantly be in a fight. You know, in our everyday lives, we're not constantly battling literally, you know, in order to, you know, live to the next day. So if you don't want that in your D&D world, you don't have to have it.
Yeah. And I think Charlie's quote after that is really good too. That line of reasoning resonates powerfully with me. While the many D&D materials published by Wizards are heavy on the combat, including major campaigns and some anthology adventures, there's nothing in the rules that stops players from working together to tell stories and build the kinds of interconnected narratives on display in Worlds Beyond Number. That part of the rule set is intentionally left open for players to find their own way by using things like insight rolls, perception checks, and other aspects of the game that aren't combat. In fact, the non-combat interactions in Worlds Beyond Number are some of the best I've experienced in any actual play. And so I want to put some context around this, that we are not saying D&D 5th edition is the catch-all and will automatically be the best thing for any type of game you want to run, because it's not. It's not at all. However, it's also not just the combat simulator
Exactly.
that some people have made it out to be. It can run very deep, very narrative campaigns in a very satisfying way. We both would encourage everyone to play other systems. Like, there are so many good things. There are some systems that, if I'm not looking for combat at all, there's probably systems that are better than D&D, because I don't need all that extra stuff that comes with D&D. If I'm looking for something that really doesn't have combat in it, but then I might find a system that has a lot more stuff that I'm looking for whatever specific scenario or adventure or campaign or session I want to run, that is much lighter, right? And much easier, easier to learn. I might want some of that more crunchy stuff that a Pathfinder might give, or a Call of Cthulhu or something like that. Again, 5e is very good at being flexible and being able to pull in homebrewy type things to morph it to what you want it to be.
Yes.
especially if that's what your group is used to, because sometimes in adult lives, you just only have enough brain space and bandwidth to go around. And sometimes that does not extend to learning a whole new system for a one shot, right? So in those cases, bolt on something to 5e. It's been done. There's tons of things, and you can really morph it into something that feels different without being unfamiliar to your players.
Exactly.
But by all means, if you have that bandwidth, experiment out, try new things. I've over the last 2 or 3 years, especially, I've been able to try new systems, and it's been super fun because then I can take some of those learnings and bring them back to my group who doesn't necessarily have bandwidth to step outside of D&D that much, or it's too out of comfort zone, or, you know, it's busy lives. We've only get to play once every 2 weeks. So you don't want to be playing all new things all the time, but I can bring some aspects of those other systems, some learnings of those other systems. And as a DM, especially, I encourage you to play other systems because you can bring a lot of that back into your own game, even if you are still just playing D&D.
And it completely goes without saying here, if you are going to be running, you know, a very RP heavy campaign or adventure or whatever, you know, where your focus is definitely not combat and you're going to kind of limit it, make sure your players know, because if you do decide to, you know, kind of run this game, you know, halfway through a campaign, suddenly your person who has really tried to min max their fighter and they're really going for, you know, the most damage they can possibly do and everything, they're going to suddenly realize, I don't exactly have the best character build for some of this stuff. That being said, even if they're min-maxing their fighter, they're still going to be able to, you know, participate in the RP. But if they're looking at things like maybe insight or, you know, perception or, you know, any other type of role that doesn't involve combat, they may be at a disadvantage if they weren't really planning to, you know, not solely focus on combat.
Yeah, I agree. There's a lot of play space, mm-hmm. a lot of things you can do. So I just wanted to bring that up, not to say necessarily that D&D is the end all of tabletop RPGs, because no, there's lots of good stuff out there. There's still lots of stuff out there I want to play that I have not gotten to play yet. But that you can likely use it to fit your group's needs if you want to play D&D.
Yes.
And the type of game that you want to play within that D&D world that you have. So I just wanted to bring that up because I thought it was super interesting. And I really liked the analogy. And it does fit very much within my own, that's really a lot of the play style I personally do too. So I thought it resonated well with me.
Yep. However you want to make believe, it's there for you.
That's right. Okay, cool. So before we go though, there's a few other little things we wanted to talk about. We talked about Chris Perkins talking about third-party content coming to D&D Beyond, and there's more new stuff that just came out. In fact, one of the third-party publishers we've been hoping to see just dropped. So Kobold Press is now on D&D Beyond with their newly revised Tome of Beasts 1, which is a giant monster book. A lot of really unique stuff in there. Over 400 different monsters. This was their very first monster book. And I think a few years back or a year or two ago, they released like a revised edition where they went back, cleaned it up, tightened up mechanics, added a few new things, added new art. And that is the version that is on D&D Beyond right now. So if you're looking for another monster book, or you are a fan of Kobold Press and have this one and won it digitally. That is now available on D&D Beyond, which is super cool. Bring on more of these and more Kobold Press stuff. I really hope we start starting to see like the Heroes Tome, or the Deep Magic stuff. I want to see the more spells. I want to see more subclasses. I want to see they have classes too that they have done. I would love to see fully recognized, actualized classes from some of these third parties on D&D Beyond as well.
Yeah.
So we wanted to let you know about that because that's one of my favorite monster books. So big win for getting that on D&D Beyond.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I need to pick it up. It's, you know, one of those gotta wait till next paycheck because I just ordered a huge Lego set.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. And then also, God, I'm going to mispronounce this so bad. They have Descent into the Lost Caverns of Sojakthin. I probably butchered that.
Sokanth? I think the J is silent.
Sokanth? It usually is. Regardless, though, there's some lost caverns. And this is part of the quest from the Infinite Staircase. They have released that specific adventure free on D&D Beyond. So we'll have the link to it. You can just jump in and claim the content and then run it just to kind of get a view of what Quest from the Infinite Staircase has to offer. So that's super cool. And free stuff is always great. So yep. We'll have a link to that in the show notes.
And it is an abridged version. So it's like, you know, kind of quick play versus the actual version that'll be in the Quest from the Infinite Staircase. So you get the Cliff's Notes version of it.
Yeah, you get the taste. They want you to have the taste so that you buy the full meal.
Yeah, exactly. It's the amuse-bouche of the Infinite Staircase.
The amuse-bouche. That's a word I didn't know until I started watching Game Changer. Or Make Some Noise on Dropout, which, oh. Small side note, if you don't have Dropout, Dropout's
so good. Yeah, no,
it's got Dimension 20, so good.
I learned it from many seasons of Top Chef, so.
And then finally, I wanted to throw this in, because this is an article that just came out, I believe, earlier today or yesterday, by DM David. And since we talked a little bit about Daggerheart last episode, DM David actually has a Daggerheart versus the MCDM RPG versus D&D, a playtest comparison, where he went and he actually playtested Daggerheart and he playtested the new MCDM RPG that is currently in development. And it's a great article. It talks through like the differences of the different games, what they're trying to accomplish, how they kind of fit into their own niche as well. And for those that play D&D, what the differences are and what the comparisons are. I thought it was a really great article. So I wanted to share that out for anyone who is interested in Daggerheart or the MCDM RPG, especially if you like D&D and or you just like playing different systems and you kind of want to see what the differences are, or if you're looking to tweak your own 5e games with potentially some of the, you know, quote unquote fixes that these games are trying to look towards for some of the pain points from fifth edition. So we'll have that link as well, but definitely check it out. DM David has a lot of great content.
Yeah. And just because it was released on April 1st doesn't mean it's actually a joke. It's a lot of good content in there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually really good. All right. With that, I think Ben, that's an episode.
It is, but I need to know what's going on in your game.
Do you? Oh yeah. Man. So this is super fun. I've just had some of my favorite sessions of any campaign I've ever run in this campaign before. We've only done 7 sessions of it. But last session we did, little jump arounds between different things. This is after they rescued these people And apparently retaliation is nigh, as many of them, two of them woke up, fire engulfing the places they were staying. Oh. And the other two, the shop of one of the players was attacked and tried to set it on fire. And so everything we did, it was completely role play. It was completely theater of the mind, even the combat stuff. And that's honestly some of my favorite combat. And it works really well when there's only like one or two enemies that you have to deal with, because it's much easier for the players to kind of picture things. And one of the big goals of the session was to try and get the players to think about their surroundings, to think about what they would have around them in their place of business, in their home or apartment, in the city itself, because this is a living organism. Like, there is a fire brigade that came and was working on putting out fires. Like, that's just something that none of them thought about because they're in this huge city. And so it's like slowly trying to change players' mindsets towards what is possible and how things work now. Because unlike most other campaigns I've played in or run, the whole idea of this one is most of these characters are deeply embedded and have real lives within this city. This is not we're just going to go out adventuring and have a bunch of thing and go from town to town and delve a dungeon or two and fight monsters. It's just like, no, I have a business I have to open up in the morning. Like, I have a job. Like, there's all sorts of different things, considerations. Like, I have a family. I have a house. So it's been a really fun, interesting journey so far. And I'm very, very excited about where I'll be able to take that. But just kind of going off of the flexibility thing and the Baldur's Gate 3 thing, I think I talked about it once or twice. I implemented a test rule at the beginning of this campaign for shoving. Because I love Baldur's Gate. And shoving as a bonus action, I thought was a stroke of genius. So I implemented that as an actual rule in my game. Any character or NPC can shove or attempt to shove as a bonus action, where the person making the shove rolls athletics, and the person who's trying not to be shoved can roll athletics or acrobatics to try and resist. Mm-hmm. If the person making the shove wins the contested roll, they push a character back 5 feet. However, and with no opportunity attacks. However, for every additional like thing they win by, rounded to the nearest 5 or 10. So let's say my enemy rolled an 18 on their athletics, and I only rolled a 10 on my acrobatics or athletics check. They would push me back 10 feet.
Oh,
instead of 5. And so it's the difference between the winning and the losing number.
Gotcha.
And you can get some like big movement. And I have to say, after playing with it so far for 7 sessions, I think I'm going to keep it permanently, because it has introduced a dynamicism.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah, sure, that works. for combat and movement that just does not exist in the base D&D game, because everyone is always scared for that opportunity attack. Mm-hmm. Or everyone is always very just run up and hit. But now my players are looking at the terrain. Can I push someone off of something? Can I push someone into something? Am I going to get pushed into something potentially? My character doesn't have a lot of bonus actions. This is really cool, because I can attempt to do this type of thing, right?
Yeah.
And so it's super cool, because it's added a completely extra element to the combat that just didn't exist before. And it was used to great effect in kind of the little combat Theater of the Mind scenes that we did for this last session and just brought about some really cool stuff. So I absolutely love it, and I highly recommend giving it a try in your game if that's something that sounds interesting, because so far my players have been loving it, and I've really been liking the results of it.
Very cool.
All right, Ben, what about you? Have you played yet?
We are playing this Saturday.
Oh, so you'll be able to talk to us about it next time.
Yes, I am excited. Wow. I have
10 pages of recap.
Yeah, it's going to be a in the beginning kind of recap. You know, they're on a big, huge, grand quest, and I want to remind them what is actually going on, what happened, because, you know, I had a huge exposition dump at the end of the last session we played back in August. So I think it's probably time to be all like, hey, this is the state of the world and what's going on and what you've actually been up to and why. And then we're going to play something that's, you know, fun. I'm not going to bring them right back into the gigantic, huge world ending quest right away in their first session back, because that would be horrible. Or am I? And we'll find out.
We'll find out next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, good stuff. I'm excited to hear about that. I hope your game goes well. Apologies that this episode was a little late with all the holidays and busyness and stuff. We just had to push the recording back a little bit, but I'm glad we were able to do it and talk about some fun and interesting stuff. So Ben, before we sign off, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached and where they can go check out all the myriad of links in the show notes.
Yep. Well, first of all, if you have any questions or comments, or you want to tell us about some of your homebrew rules, or the thing you're most excited about for the new editions of the DMG Player's Handbook and Monster Manual, you can send those via email to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We'd love to read anything that you send to us. If you are looking specifically for us with something that's, like maybe I think it's a 300 character limit or something like that, you can find us on Blue Sky. The show is at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBK Zord, and I am at Ben Baumhofer. Now, if you want to actually listen to me play Dungeons and Dragons, you can find that on a actual play called +5 to Hit. We release sometimes, usually about maybe twice a month or so, sometimes a little later. You know how scheduling D&D can be. There's a bunch of us playing. Sometimes schedules don't exactly line up exactly for every 2 weeks, so we do what we can. But we did just play yesterday, and some surprising stuff happened. I'm actually pretty happy about how things went down. This show, though, DN Discussions, you can find us on dndiscussions.com. Every single episode is available there. That's right, all other 107 episodes. You can, of course, always find us on your podcast player of choice, which, you know, we're there too. But if you want to get to us directly and know when shows come out, know what we're talking about beforehand, things like that, you can find us on our Discord. Now, a link to that will be found on dndiscussions.com, as well as links to all the social medias that I just told you about. So you could technically have ignored that section, but I appreciate you listening anyway. So, Ryan, it's been a pleasure talking to you this week. I am looking forward to telling you about what's going on in my game and, of course, anything else that's coming up until next time we record. And with that, audience, thank you very much for listening. We love every single one of you. You are special. You are great. Make sure to roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.